This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. The first Jesuit pope, the first pope to replace a sitting pope in 600 years, the first pope from the New World, Pope Francis has been raising eyebrows and spirits of progressives and the blood pressure of stalwart Catholics with his recent interviews and public statements. He has said things like, "Who am I to judge a gay person? I believe in God, not in a Catholic God. The church sometimes has locked itself up in small things, in small-minded rules, and we cannot insist only on issues related to abortion, gay marriage, and the use of contraceptive methods. This is not possible. I have not spoken much about these things, and I was reprimanded for that. But when I speak about these issues, we have to talk about them in context. The teaching of the church, for that matter, is clear, and I am the son of the church. But it is not necessary to talk about these issues all the time." Well, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about him this next hour, talking about Pope Francis and where he is leading the Catholic Church. One member of the Catholic Church is very upset, so upset he put the Pope on notice. I'm talking about Stephen Colbert.
I have had it up to here with our new Pope. He is washing the feet of criminals, saying atheists can be redeemed, not judging the gays, and saying we can't serve God and money at the same time. Oh, yes, we can. But now, the Pope has given an exhaustive interview initiated by the Jesuit magazine America, which was filled with papal bombshells. And get how the so-called Vicar of Christ justifies his position, saying, "The proclamation of the saving love of God comes before moral and religious imperatives." Oh, love before rules? My favorite part of Catholicism is the rule following. It's the scorecard for getting into heaven. Plus, I get to tell people they're going to hell when they screw up. Now, I know Jesus said, "Judge not, lest ye be judged." That's why I always judge people when they judge me for judging them. Now, unfortunately, we're stuck with Pope Kumbaya here. Well, folks, we don't have to take this sitting down, then standing up, then kneeling, then standing up again. There is one person in this world with the moral authority to reprimand the infallible Bishop of Rome. Me, Stephen Colbert.
And that was Stephen Colbert on Comedy Central talking about the Pope and putting him officially on notice. And that's our topic today. We want to hear from you. What do you think about the job performance of the Pope? Call in at 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. You could also email to thesource@tpr.org or comment directly on our website at tpr.org. And joining us to talk about this, we have Jean-Pierre Ruiz. He is a professor at St. John's University. Ruiz sits on the editorial boards of the Journal of Hispanic Latino Theology and the Journal of American Academy of Religion, among others. And we're also joined by Kane University professor and church historian Christopher Bellito. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
So let me ask you, Jean-Pierre Ruiz, today the Pope came out and said he's calling for a conference of bishops to discuss the family and in the context of evangelization. What do you think the Pope is looking for here?
Well, to step back just a little bit from this is going to be the next assembly of a body called the Synod of Bishops, which regularly convenes in Rome to gather the wisdom of the Catholic bishops from around the world about a particular topic. Now, it's also important to note that before announcing the theme of the forthcoming synod on the family and evangelization, this pope consulted with the Council of Cardinals in ways that make it clear that it's his intention to strengthen the role of the synod, that is, to strengthen the horizontal dimension, the global dimension of the governance and the pastoral ministry of the church. Listening to the wisdom that comes from the bishops around the world.
So, Christopher Bellito, church historian, this is big news?
Yes, it is. It's big news and it's welcome news, but it's not news out of the blue. Because if you go back to the earliest ways that the church made decisions in councils. We're talking about the centuries of the 3rd, the 4th, the 5th centuries. Bishops came together, and the questions that they considered were the questions that were being asked by laymen and laywomen back home. And so the questions about how do we describe who Jesus is, who is Mary, what is the relationship among Father, Son, and Spirit, were not questions that someone in Rome said, we'll put it on an agenda and see what people think, or even worse, we'll tell people what to think. Rather, these were questions that bubbled from the bottom up or from the periphery to the center, and that's a principle called subsidiarity, that a decision should be made at the lowest level possible. That was re-embraced by the Second Vatican Council, Vatican II, the great church council in the 1960s, 1962 to 1965, which brought out a notion of decision-making that was far more inclusive, not just top-down and bottom-up, but left and right and right and left. And it appears that this pope wants that kind of decision-making to take place. Even, for instance, before the Synod of Bishops meets, it appears, if he's going in the direction that we believe he's going, that it will be likely that he wants bishops to meet with their own people about these questions and these issues and to hear the voice of everyone, to get what we call the sensus fidelium, the sense of the people of God. As he said in an interview that is being called The Interview, capital T, capital I, which was published in America Magazine a few weeks ago, he says very clearly that thinking with the church doesn't mean thinking only with the hierarchy. It means thinking with all of the people of God.
So he's calling for the synod with talking about the family and the pastoral challenges of the family in the context of evangelization. Some people are thinking that this has something to do with divorce and remarrying of Catholics. Is that possible?
Pope Francis.
Well, it sounds.
Okay, I'm sorry, Mr. Benito.
Sure. It sounds to me like he may be going in that direction, picking up on various strands that he has made earlier, and those strands seem to be the question of can divorced Catholics receive communion? Can Catholics who haven't received annulments and remarried receive communion? He seems to be taking a much more merciful and pastoral approach. So I would be surprised if the day after this first meeting they announced divorced Catholics can receive communion. I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be delighted to hear that. But I think what happens is you begin to change the culture so that reform is going to take a lot of time and it's going to take patience, but this is how it begins.
And Jean-Pierre Ruiz, do you agree with that?
I think that's entirely right. This pope has thus far been very consistent in a message of outreach to people who have, up until this point, understood themselves to be marginalized by the church. And he wants the church to be, as he described it, a big field hospital rather than a small tent, rather than a small chapel for the few, a big field hospital for the many.
We are talking about the Pope, Pope Francis, and his leadership in the Catholic Church. He has certainly has made news recently, and we want to see what our Catholic community in San Antonio think about that. We want you to join the conversation. We'll take the calls. We come back from the break. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. This hour's topic is about Pope Francis and his leadership of the Catholic Church. We've got on the phone Jean-Pierre Ruiz. He's a professor of St. John's University. And we also have Professor Christopher Bellito. He is with Kane University and a church historian. We're going to take some calls now. Patty is on the line. Let's get Patty on the air. Patty, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. It's an exciting topic.
All right, go right ahead. Tell us what you think.
I think this has just been such a breath of fresh air. So many people have fallen away from the church. It became an environment of exclusivity and, turning away those people that Christ would have welcomed to his table. And, this is such a wonderful thing. I've started going back to church because I feel full of hope, and, although I don't think I'm going to see the role of women change much in my lifetime, but, it gives me hope that one day, that will also happen. But the fact that so many marginalized people are being included It's just a beautiful thing. It can only make the church stronger and more beautiful and follow truly what Christ's teachings were all about.
Patty, thank you so much for calling in. Christopher Belitos, Patty mentions that our Pope is calling for greater roles of women in the church, not priesthood. He's made that clear, but he does want to have a more higher profile female roles.
Well, he said on the flight coming back from Rio that, you know, that women are more important than anybody. Women are more important than popes. Women are more important than bishops in the life of the church. And certainly without getting into stereotypical gender roles, I think it's pretty clear for many of us of a certain age that our mothers were our first teachers in the faith. And I would say that our parents, I know my mother and my father, were my teachers in the faith, and that's not because they taught me doctrine, that's because they showed me love. The doctrine kind of came later. And so I think what we really need, though, as part of the earlier discussion that we had, is having lay people, lay men and lay women involved, however, not just being consulted, not just in consultative bodies, but in deliberative bodies, that is decision-making.
And Jean-Pierre Ruiz, the Pope that we have now, we've got two popes. And so I've heard some people who don't like this progressive comments from our Pope Francis saying, well, he's not my Pope. I'm going to stick with Pope Ratzenberger. I mean, can this also be causing a divide within the Catholic Church?
Pope Benedict made it perfectly clear when, with tremendous humility, he acknowledged the frailty of his age when he announced, quite by surprise, that he was going to be the first pope in many centuries to step down from the See of Peter, to step down from being Bishop of Rome. He promised that he would be obedient to and faithful to his successor. And so, in fact, he has been. Now, it's been Pope Francis who, on several occasions, has reached out to Pope Benedict, visiting with him at Castel Gandolfo, sharing the stage with him, as it were, in a ceremony in the Vatican Gardens, dedicating a statue of St. Michael the Archangel, and certainly making the sorts of cold calls that have been so characteristic of Pope Francis's style in Rome. The Pope we have is the Pope we have, and this Pope, preferring the title of Bishop of Rome, is really emphasizing the role of the Bishop of Rome as a bishop that is, in his own words, as someone who has the smell of the sheep, as someone who wants to be close to the people. I think that kind of an outreach, I think that kind of an approach on the part of the Bishop of Rome is irresistible.
So Jean-Pierre Ruiz, with Pope Benedict, you're saying that he is still kind of has a consulting influence, but he certainly is not going to be high profile.
He's made it very clear that he's not going to do any more writing, so to speak. He's made it clear that he's going to be obedient to and respectful of the authority of his successor, and at the same time, Pope Francis has referred to him as a friendly figure, as almost grandfatherly toward him. And what pope, what right-minded pope, is not going to take advantage of the wisdom of the experience of his predecessor? Previous popes haven't been able to do that for a very, very long time.
Many of us still,
in the past, when they did have a prior pope floating around, you know, often that was a period of competing popes and anti-popes going back 600, 700, 800 years. So you wouldn't want to have a conversation. I think we should clarify as well that we do not have two popes, that we have one pope. And that was one of the reasons why I was not in favor of our calling Benedict, Pope Benedict, even Pope Emeritus. Papa Ratzinger, I think, would be the way to go, since it has kind of a grandfatherly, the word Papa in Italian and in English has that kind of grandfatherly respect. I also think the fact that he is continuing to wear white, a bit confusing. He said, well, I'm not wearing the little cape that sometimes the popes wear, but I don't think anyone understands that. And I think it is sometimes confusing to see the two of them, however much, as Jean-Pierre makes very clear, a gift, an absolute gift, to Francis is to have someone who sat in that seat. If anyone has read about the relationship of former presidents of the United States, be they Republicans or Democrats, the current president often draws on the experience of prior ones. So though it's a unique relationship, not necessarily one that we may not see again, because I think that Benedict has allowed us now to have conversations about popes resigning and what if popes become incapacitated. There is no 25th Amendment in canon law. There is no vice pope. If something terrible happened to a pope that did not take his life, but he was in a persistent vegetative state, basically all bets are off.
Looking online on my own Facebook account when I started this conversation online, one person wrote in that the Pope is in touch with our world as it is today. He's not isolated behind the ideals of the sacraments. He seems to reach out in love with his statements and stances on acceptance. I hope that more people can come to know the love of Jesus through him, and the world needs it desperately. Do you think this is the right Pope for the right time, Christopher Bellito?
I do. That remains to be seen. I'm an historian, not a prophet. But it certainly seems that, you know, people who are a lot smarter than I am have made the point that he almost single-handedly and almost overnight changed the narrative, whereas Catholicism was backwards and authoritarian. He's kind of a little light bulb, and I think people are feeling excited about that. After Vatican II, there was kind of a move. While the Catholic Church cannot be described as right or left, certainly there are conservative and liberal Catholics. And as happens in any revolution, the French Revolution or the American Revolution, there's a swing in one direction and a swing in another direction. And as Hegel said, there's a thesis, an antithesis, and then a synthesis. And I think as we celebrate the 50th anniversaries of Vatican II, we are at that synthesis moment where we can take the best and avoid the worst. And here we have a pope who was the first pope who was not at the council. And so he is not beholden to the council in the same way as, well, he voted for this document or that document. And yet he very clearly is a son of the council. He has called Vatican II absolutely irreversible.
And Jean-Pierre Ruiz, this pope was elected. So do you think that the body of cardinals, they knew this was the pope that they were getting?
The backstory about the previous conclave, the conclave in which Joseph Ratzinger was elected pope, was that Cardinal Bergoglio was number two in the running. But for whatever reason, it was Ratzinger who was elected. This time around, he was considered a favorite by those who track these sorts of things, by the odds makers. I think that his election is quite right for the time in which we're living, as Chris has said. I should also add that unlike his two predecessors, John Paul II and Joseph Ratzinger, who were participants in the council, Ratzinger as an expert, as a theological expert, and Wojtyła himself as a council father, as a bishop, Pope Francis is the first pope to have been formed as a priest, to have been educated as a priest, to have been prepared for his ministry in Argentina as a Jesuit after the Second Vatican Council. And so he's the heir of the council in a very, very different way from those who themselves were participating in the debates and contributing to the composition of the documents that the council promulgated. I think that makes a very, very big difference between him and his two predecessors.
And so Jean-Pierre Ruiz, how big of a deal is it that he is from the New World, that he is, not from Europe?
I think that after John Paul II from Poland, who broke the pattern of Italian popes, after Joseph Ratzinger from Germany, it is time. It's high time that someone from Latin America, which represents such a significant proportion of the Catholic population of the world, sit in the chair of Peter as Bishop of Rome and pastor of the Church. He brings a very different perspective as an Argentinian and speaks from the experience of a church that is very different from the church in Europe, from a church that is, although it's 500 years old plus, that is much younger in many ways than the church in Europe. And the distance provides a kind of a perspective that speaks to and that speaks from a church that is global in ways that we did not understand it to be the case in the past.
So, Christopher Bellito, what do you think about the influence of being from the New World?
Well, I think it's all to the good. The world, I think Catholicism is going to be saved by its Hispanic or Latino heart. And certainly churches in the United States have been revitalized in a lot of communities by the whole range of Hispanic or Latino Catholicism. And we should note, by the way, that when the Vatican says Latin America, they mean what we call Central and South America. So it's as huge a swath as you can imagine. And this is a church that, while it has wealth, also has a great deal more poverty than we might find in other places. And I think that that was very, very formative of this particular pope. Obviously, choosing the name Francis is an indication of that. It's a new sensibility. And I think that's what people are some people are struggling with. You know, I mean, I've heard people say, I want a pope who acts like a pope, and I don't really know what that means, because we've had Peter and we've had the Borgias. Choose your poison there, you know. I mean, Peter is in some ways the best model for a pope that you can absolutely imagine. Not that he's poison, but that he's so human. You know, Peter who fails, Peter who denies Jesus and yet is loved by Christ in a special way. And that humanness, that notion of I am a sinner, is something that really comes through in Francis. Not that John Paul II didn't consider himself a sinner. Of course he did. Not that Benedict didn't. That's the difficulty of having these conversations, is that everyone presumes that if you're praising Francis, you're denigrating Benedict, and you're not. History says there have been many, many different types, many different ways of being pope, and this is a different way of being pope.
All right, we're going to continue the conversation about Pope Francis and his leadership of the Catholic Church. We're going to take a break for NPR News, but then we will be right back. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Welcome back to the second half of The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We've spent this hour, we're talking about Pope Francis and his leadership and direction of the Catholic Church. With me over the phone, we have Jean-Pierre Ruiz. He's a professor at St. John's University. He is also on the editorial boards of the Journal of Hispanic and Latino Theology and Journal of American Academy of Religion. Also, we have joining us, we have Christopher Bellito. He is with Kane University. He's a professor and a church historian. We're going to get to the phones. We need you to call in to tell us what you think, what's happening with the Pope, and whether you're a fan or whether you have some concerns. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. Joe's been very patient. Joe, let's get Joe on the line. Joe, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. I went to Catholic school for 18 years here in San Antonio, and what I think about Pope Francis, what's most remarkable is that he's humble. The message that I got in all those years of Catholic school was that the Catholic Church really had absolute truth. It takes a certain amount of arrogance if you look at it logically. But when people believe something, they believe that this is the absolute truth. And here comes somebody that says, well, maybe it's not. That humility that is exhibited by Francis is absolutely refreshing and wonderful. I think it's going to serve him well, except with the very conservative members who think that he's wrong about issues like women's issues and the issue of homosexuality. He's saying, who am I? That takes humility. I think he's a great guy, and I might even go back to church someday.
Okay, Joe, thank you for those comments. Christopher Bellito, when you hear Joe's comments, do you think that he is the voice of many out there?
I think he is. I should say that I think I agree with Jean-Pierre that the resignation of Benedict was incredibly humble and noble as well. And again, there are different ways of being humble. I think that Joseph Ratzinger, as an introverted person, just as a human being, had a humility about him, but we couldn't see that because he also, as a person, had a flair, a taste for kind of fancy liturgical garments, and that was very distancing. And also, quite frankly, the management style of John Paul II. The freshness and the reaction that we see to Francis now reminds me of the first about 15 years of the papacy of John Paul II. When he died, I said that the pope who said yes to the world in the 1980s said no to the church in the 1990s, and there was a very big openness in the global pope and the first one in 455 years who wasn't an Italian. But then he increasingly had an authoritarian style, and there were bishops at the time who very quietly were saying that they felt that they were being treated like altar boys from Rome, and that continued under Benedict XVI. In the interview, Pope Francis said that eventually, I'm quoting him now, eventually people get tired of authoritarianism. And I must say that there's a certain irony that's going on with conservative Catholics. Again, I think that there are liberal and conservative Catholics, though Catholicism can't be put in those American political ideological terms, you know, who are talking about a murkiness or a mushiness to Francis. And I think that that's a wrong interpretation. He's made absolutely clear that what the teaching and what the doctrine is in certain affairs, but in certain matters. But the issue is that many of the people who are grumbling and grumbling publicly about Francis should be happy that they now have such a climate, because no one ever raised a word publicly about John Paul II and Benedict XVI for fear of what would happen. And so that climate change, I think, is the most important thing. You know, people say it's just style. It's not just style. There's substance to that style. And once you change the climate, once you change the culture, then you can have the important conversations.
Okay, back to the phones. Our number is 614-8980, 614-8980. Sarah is on the line. Sarah, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thank you. I'm a cradle Catholic, and I love Pope Francis. And I'm sure I saw it on Facebook or an email from a friend that showed three pictures, one of Pope John Paul II, one of Benedict, and one of Pope Francis. And under John Paul's picture, it said, "This is what we believe." Under Pope Benedict, it said, "This is why we believe it." And under Pope Francis's picture, it says, "Now go do it." And I think that's kind of a good summarization of their differences. And I hope, I've heard that this Pope is going to bring a lot of people back home to the Catholic Church. And I just hope us Catholics that have stayed welcome them back with open arms, no questions asked.
Like the prodigal son?
Yes.
All right, Sarah. Thank you so much. And so Jean-Pierre Ruiz, Sarah is saying that there are people who have stuck with the Catholic Church, and they are ready to welcome home those of us who have strayed.
I think that many of my own friends and many of my own colleagues, some of them fallen away Catholics, some never Catholic at all, have found the appeal of this Pope quite irresistible, with many of them contemplating, and not jokingly at all, that maybe this would be the time for them to return to the Church. Maybe this would be a time for them to consider becoming Catholic. But I want to lift up something else about Sarah's very perceptive comment, and it's in the comparison of John Paul II, of Benedict XVI, and Francis, that what people need to bear in mind as we consider the person of the Pope, the person of the Bishop of Rome, is that each occupant of that very challenging post brings all of his humanity to the post. And different people have different strengths, and different people have different challenges, and different people have different growth areas. And I think that in the strengths of Pope Francis, we're seeing a breath of fresh air that comes from the strengths that this particular Bishop of Rome brings to the challenging job that he has before him. And it's only been 6 months.
And the Church, you know, they thinks in geologic time and also thinks globally, but, you know, it takes a long view. So you have to consider each pope and look back in context of hundreds of thousands and thousands of years.
I think that that's certainly the case, but the Pope for the 21st century Church, the Pope for the 21st century world, has to communicate in ways that the people of our world can understand. And it's for that reason that he's turned from a policy and a practice as Archbishop of Buenos Aires, where he was reluctant to speak publicly, reluctant to grant interviews, that in the last several weeks he's given two major interviews. One as a result of the invitation from Jesuit journals from America in the United States and from others, and most recently the interview that he granted to the founder of La Repubblica, Eugenio Scalfari, who is an atheist. So the Pope reached out and cold-called an atheist to engage him in a private conversation that Scalfari then published in La Repubblica and which has been making a lot of noise throughout the world, and I think for lots of good reasons.
And the Pope has also taken to Twitter. He has tweeted, "War, never again, never again war." He has also tweeted his condemnation for the use of chemical weapons. We're going to continue our conversation about Pope Francis and the leadership and the direction of the Catholic Church. How do you feel about this? San Antonio is a big Catholic city. We want to see what this means for our community. Give us a call. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. If you support the new Pope, we would love to hear from you. If you've got questions about where he's taking the church, please give us a call. The number is 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Pope Francis. If you want to join the conversation, the number is 614-8980, 614-8980. Even if you're non-Catholic, you know, the Pope is a world leader. What is he saying to you when he has comments that where he wants, he's anti-war, anti-chemical weapons, he wants to the church to really be at the forefront of helping the poor in the world. Let me ask you, Jean-Pierre Ruiz, you know, the Pope has, the people are really worried. I think this is what the people who are conservatives and stalwarts of the church, this is what I think their concern is, that when the Pope makes statements that, who am I to judge a gay person? I believe in God, not a Catholic judge. They're worried that these statements are going to kind of erode at the moral authority of the church if you're allowed saying, well, abortion is not, you know, let's not get fixated on abortion. Is that possible?
I think that that concern is ill-placed in this sense. This Pope has said again and again and again that he's a son of the church and a servant of the church, and for that reason, he doesn't understand it as his place to unilaterally change church doctrine. I think a very important statement of his was a statement that he made to the clergy of Assisi during his recent visit for the Feast of St. Francis. Speaking to the priests of Umbria who were gathered in the cathedral, he told them that sometimes the priest has to walk ahead of the people, sometimes the priest has to walk in the midst of the people, and sometimes the priest has to walk behind the people. And why? Not only to keep people from becoming stragglers, but because it is the people who have the sensus fidei, as it were. The sensus fidei, an expression that suggests that the people have the sense of the faith. The people baptized, inspired by the Holy Spirit, are the faithful of the church. So he understands the role of those who are involved in ministry as a matter of listening to the people as well.
And Christopher Bellito, do you think that the Pope he seems to be fixated on the spiritualness of people and not so much of their activities of this world?
Well, I don't think you can separate the two. I think when I was reading the interview, and I was trained by Jesuits, and once they get into your heart, they can't get out, and that's a good thing. I think the thing that I see about him is that Jesuit training, that you have to read the signs of the times, as Vatican II called us to, and then you have to every day try to do something to make the world better, what the Jesuits call the magis, for the one thing better, that I'm going to make the world better today. And you can't do that spiritually unless your hands are getting dirty among the people. And so I think it's kind of a false dichotomy to separate the spiritual and the worldly, because certainly St. Ignatius of Loyola, the founder of the Jesuits, and St. Francis of Assisi would never have seen it that way. You know, there's the famous line that St. Francis said, you know, what he said was that the brothers should be preaching the gospel with their hands. That's come down as preach the gospel, use words if you must. That exact phrase didn't come out of Francis's mouth as far as we know. But it certainly tells us that what's more important is walking the walk instead of just talking the talk. And I think that's where people kind of feel the disconnect, which I think is a little unfair to Benedict and a little unfair to John Paul II. But what they're getting from Francis is that he gets it and that he's walking, you know, with the people in our struggles, whether we are a nun or a priest or a mother or a father or divorced or a widow or an orphan. And I think that that's really, really resonating.
The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. If you want to speak out on how you feel about the new pope, let's get Deirdre on the line. Deirdre, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good morning, or afternoon. Thank you. I just wanted to say I was raised Catholic, and I left the church about 15 years ago. And I keep up with stuff, and I loved John Paul, and I had no problems with Benedict, but I am amazed by Pope Francis. I think he's doing a wonderful job in, as you said, you know, actually acting as he's preaching, and he's taking the church back to the origins of what it was founded on. So I think he's a wonderful pope.
And what do you think about, you know, him living in not in the grand pope scale, but he's in the regular old apartment and driving a beat up old car? What does that say to you, Deirdre?
I think that's appropriate. The whole point of the priesthood was to serve the people, to be humble, to take care of the poor and those less needy, those more needy. Living in opulence isn't really putting you in connection with those who can't clothe themselves or feed themselves. I think he's doing the right thing.
All right, Deirdre, thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate that. So he had the Pope had this quote, "It hurts me when I see a priest or a nun with the latest model car. You can't do this. A car is necessary to do a lot of work, but please choose a more humble one. If you like the fancy one, just think about how many children are dying of hunger in the world." And so he's apparently driving a Ford Focus, which has a sticker price of $16,000. Christopher Bellito, what do you think? What is the Pope saying when he says that?
Well, he's certainly saying that this is not the Medici form of Catholicism. And I think he's telling people, you know, he's talking about credibility. He's talking about authenticity, not that John Paul II or Benedict the 16th were not authentic or credible. But he gets it. He's saying that we can talk all we want. And I think the people in the pew are tired of having this wag-their-finger Catholicism at them. They're tired of politics from the pulpit. And especially when the Catholic Church in America and in Ireland and other places has just gone through a really tough 12 years with the clergy sex abuse scandal. And there are a lot of people in the pews who are sitting there looking at a priest or a bishop, picking and choosing which political stances to take, and a lot of people in the pews feel that the pulpit has been politicized, and they're saying, "Well, where do you come off saying that when we have this horrible story going on about the sex abuse scandal?" And so I think a line like, you know, "Stop driving these fancy cars." The funny thing is that I think that the kind of the cufflink or the Cadillac Catholicism that we've had for a while is going out the door. I was listening to interviews of men who were ordained priests in May and June of this year, which means that they've been in the system 6 or 7 years, and all of a sudden they say 2 or 3 months after Francis was ordained, was chosen as Pope, "Oh, you know, all along Francis of Assisi was our favorite saint anyway." So I think soup kitchens are going to become the new cufflinks. The question will be, are people doing it because they want to do it, or are people doing it because they think that there's a new echo chamber in Rome? You can't fake authenticity.
Clayton wants to join the conversation. Clayton, welcome to The Source. You're on the air, Clayton.
Thanks for taking my call. My comment was that there was something mentioned about the moral authority of the church, and I think that whatever this pope does, it cannot harm the church as much as the scandals that have happened. It could be argued that the Catholic Church doesn't necessarily have any moral authority. And I will take my comments off the air.
All right, Clayton, thank you for that call. So, Reverend Ruiz, any comments on that?
Well, I think that the witness that the church gives to its authenticity, the honesty, the candor with which the church deals with the fact of its sinfulness, is going to be very important. Likewise, I think, for example, that it was very, very important that the first visits by this pope outside, the first pastoral visits, were to the island of Lampedusa, which has been welcoming so many refugees from North Africa. And there he used the opportunity of being among the refugees in Lampedusa to call for people of faith and to call for people of goodwill to do something about the injustice of the refugee crisis in Lampedusa, to act on behalf of those who are poor, to act on behalf of those who are struggling, to act on behalf of those who are on the outs in terms of society. And I think that's a very important lesson for our own country. Likewise, his second visit to a place outside of the Italian mainland was to Sardinia, where he addressed the problems of global unemployment, where he spoke very directly to the crisis, the world economic crisis. So while this pope is certainly insisting that the church stay out of partisan politics, he's very much insisting that the church get involved in changing the world for the good, that it reform itself, that it not spend as much time in the sacristy, and that it spend more time in the streets, listening to the cries of people in the streets.
Okay, back to the phones. Mark is on the line. Mark, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, one of the things that I have really appreciated about this pope is that, you know, it's, for somebody like me who describes himself as a selective occasional Catholic, for him to say some of the things and tweet some of the things that he's been tweeting recently, such as the greatest measure that a society can be measured by is the manner in which it treats its poor and treats those who have nothing apart from their poverty, is a reflection of his Jesuit teachings, and it shows his empathy and his sympathy about what he thinks the role of the church is in making that a lesson for the rest of us as Christians and Catholics. And I really appreciate the manner in which he is doing that. Prior popes have pontificated really from their teachings, and I just think that this pope has done something that shows that he truly understands what the lessons of the church are. And that's my only comment.
Okay, Mark, thank you for that call. I appreciate you calling in and letting us know that. All the calls we've had today, people very enthusiastic and supportive of Pope Francis. And of course, this is just a snippet, and the pope has got to think globally. But it certainly seems like people they want to go back to church, and here's a man who's welcoming them back into the Catholic Church. I certainly want to thank Christopher Bellito. He is a professor at Kane University, church historian, and also the Reverend Jean-Pierre Ruiz, a professor at St. John's University. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for helping us understand where this new pope is coming from. This is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flab is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.